Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
Here come the Leafs. It's their turn to center Austin Matthews with Connor Brown. In under Kaiser. Carter comes up late. His pass side of the net. Matthews backhander scores!
2-on-1 over the line. Here's Shore moving in on Mrazek. Fakes inside. Got the shot away. And that puck is in on the rebound. It's Keyhole. Towards the left side. Klingberg, I believe, shot it in.
Defenseman Klingberg.
Harkin to Zetterberg over the New York line. Pass across. It was intercepted. Coming back on the play with Shea. The Rangers play it ahead. Here's Zuccarello breaking in left circle. Feed pass across and the Rangers score.
The Red Wings are not exactly setting the Joe out in style.
Can't help about the shape I'm in. I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. Don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to.
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I am Ryan Dixon. I am a writer for Sportsnet.ca. Sitting to my left, Sportsnet.ca's NHL editor, Rory Boylan.
Got a question for you.
Okay.
A math question.
Oh, good.
What is 2 plus 2 times 2?
2 plus 2 times 2. It better be 8.
2 plus 2 multiplied by 2. What's going to be answer?
6.
No, great job. That's the Russian math. We're best in the math and the hockey.
The answer is 6. This was hilarious on the Players Tribune because you do the multiplication first. And then you go back and you do the addition. So Brizgalov, the Players Tribune sent Brizgalov to the All-Star Weekend, and he was going around asking random questions. And one of them he asked everybody was that multiplication question. All the North Americans answered at 8, and all the Russians answered at 6.
It was hilarious. Man. No wonder he's going to outer space, right? He's got the math skills to build the rocket himself. Man, I think it's fair to say we miss Briz, Cool Breeze, as he was dubbed, possibly by former Hockey News colleague Ryan Kennedy. I can't remember, but yeah, Cool Breeze indeed. Sadly, that's it for our Brizgalov chat here today, but we do have a bunch of other topics, including the St. Louis Blues. We're going to talk to NHL.com's Louis Korak, who is on the scene in St. Louis. Man, not good times there with Ken Hitchcock being relieved of his duties. Mike Yeo taking over. We're going to take the temperature in St. Louis. If anyone has listened to this podcast before, you know I get super excited for fake trades. We are going deep on fake trades with the deadline just a month away. Man, that is going to be fun. We're also going to drop in on some non-playoff teams, maybe chat a little Red Wings, certainly the Avs, and map out a plan there because they are going to be one fascinating team to watch. But first, before we go any farther, it's giveaway time. We are breaking new ground here on T2T. We have got 3 signed copies of John Scott's autobiography, A Guy Like Me, Fighting to Make the Cut. I think we all saw that the All-Star Game really missed John Scott because,
yep,
man, it was fun 2 years ago and kind of went back to its old form there this time. But yes, if you are interested in getting your own copy, one of these 3 signed copies by Mr. Scott using those hands that used to pound people into a pulp for other means here, we've got a trivia question for you. So you can answer by tweeting at Rory and at myself. So it would be at Rory Boylan and at Dixon on Sports. Tweet both those handles with your answer. The question is, how many goals did Mr. Scott score in a 4-year NCAA career at Michigan Tech? How many total goals did John Scott score during his 4 years at Michigan Tech? Tweet at Rory Boylan, at Dixon on Sports, your answer. If it's one of the first 3, we will make sure that you get this book. All right. On to matters of the moment in the NHL. Producer Sam was saying before we got rolling here, it's still kind of weird to see the Red Wings at the bottom of the standings, isn't it? But does it not? I don't know. I mean, I wrote, you know, along with any number of other people when they were in Toronto for the Winter Classic that, you know, fighting a pretty big uphill battle. And I was certainly of the opinion that it's probably time to turn the page. I even wonder if symbolically there's something to be said for, okay, it's amazing that they've had this 25-year streak or whatever it is. But to some degree would help to move on from that to say, but we're on to new things here. You know, we've got to switch things up. We got to do, I mean, no one expects a Buffalo or Leafs style rebuild in Detroit, I don't think. But
yeah, it'd be hard to do with some of the contracts.
It would be hard to do with some of the contracts they have, but it's clearly time for a retool, right? Like, they've got to do what they can here at this deadline and then try and get creative in the summer. Because as we've seen too, I mean, even if they aren't drafting first overall or second overall, I know this draft isn't as strong as the past one, maybe past two, but kids can make a real impact quickly on your NHL roster these days. And you do have Dylan Larkin there, who I think is still largely viewed as a very good player. Anthony Mantha has come along. I'm just going to call him AA because I'll still screw up.
Andreas Athanasius.
But he's obviously showing a little something. So I'm saying there's a little something there.
He deserves more time.
He deserves more time. And that's what I'm saying, even more so than trade Henrik Zetterberg. Like, turn the reins over to these guys and see what you've got. Because, it's time for a little shakeup there.
Yeah, definitely it's time for a shakeup in Detroit. I just don't know what kind of moves you're actually going to be able to make with Henrik Zetterberg is signed for $6 million through 2021. You have Justin Abdelkader on what's going to be an awful contract through 2023, I believe, $4.25 million for what basically is a checking player, right?
Sure.
He's not anything too special. Darren Helm's there for another 4 years after this one. Danny DeKeyser, $5 million through 2022. You know, you have a lot of guys who are signed for a while, so you're still kind of committed to the basic core of this team, what it is now, more or less. How do you move on from those guys? I think it can't come as a surprise to us that Detroit has taken a step back. It was going to happen at some point, and I think a lot of that, too, has to do with Peter Mrazek just totally cratering. I mean, he went last year from a goalie on a sharp rise who was being billed as, you know, can this guy be as good as Carey Price one day? Can he be an elite goaltender? He sure, certainly looks like it. He's got a lot of speed in the crease. He moves very well. And now he's got a save percentage below 900, and we're thinking he's probably going to be available to Vegas at the expansion draft, which if I was them, I would scoop him up, I think, because
I'd take a shot.
Yeah, why not? That has a lot to do with the problem that's been going on here. But the question should be less, should we give up on the Red Wings, and more, do you believe Ken Holland is still the GM he once was, and is he the guy who can turn this around?
No, it's all about mandate. And I mean, if Ken Holland has been going into Mike Ilitch's office for 5 years saying, we've got a great team, we just got to commit to all these guys, then I'd be worried. But if the mandate has been, get us in the playoffs, get us in the playoffs, get us in the playoffs, then that's what Ken Holland's been trying to do. If you change the mandate, if you say, Ken, new plan, then absolutely he could be the guy.
Sure, yeah, and I don't doubt it either. I'm not sitting here doubting Ken Holland, but there have been, if you're trying to get into the playoffs, you're going to be acquiring the Mike Greens like you did.
Yeah, Franz Nielsen.
Why do you need to sign Justin Abdelkader for a crazy long contract? You know, there are some questionable decisions.
Fair enough.
Like that I think have been made too. So it's not just an automatic pass, but I think he has earned it for sure. He's got this long tracker. They've made the playoffs every year he's been the GM there. So I'm not going to suddenly doubt this guy, but there have been some decisions where you're left scratching your head saying, gee, I wonder.
Sure.
Because the game has definitely, there's no doubt the game has changed over his time as general manager. When he was, you know, when the Red Wings were playing in back-to-back Stanley Cup finals against the Penguins in 2008 and 2009, the league was one thing, and now it's something completely different where he still seems to want to carve out a spot for a guy like Steve Ott on this team, where really I don't think a guy like Steve Ott has a place on a good NHL team anymore. Those good teams have moved on from the prototypical bottom six guy like Ott, the muscle, and moved on to a guy who is maybe younger, maybe in his early 30s, but who can skate.
But you know what's funny is when I think of teams that were first to the line to change after the lockout, it mm-hmm. was Detroit.
Yeah,
Detroit
was
always, I mean, obviously going back to, you know, it's important to point out in the Red Wings storyline, you know, good on them for at a time when teams were probably still more hesitant to draft Europeans. They drafted Lidstrom. They mm-hmm. found Zetterberg super late. I mean, that was a home run, like whatever he is, seventh round pick. And Datsyuk, I think, was a third rounder, right? I mean,
Datsyuk was like seventh. Or
oh, maybe I got it mixed up then. But they're, you know, both of them are like third round and well beyond.
Yes.
Chances are you're not going to get that lucky again. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But the Red Wings were forward thinking, and at a time when, you know, other franchises were still stuck in the like, let's ride Darian Hatcher as far as we can. Detroit was the team that was like, nope, that's not going to work in this new scene. And they did go to puck possession is a term I first heard in my mind in relation to Mike Babcock with the Red Wings, you know,
yep.
back in the day kind of thing. And even when Anaheim, the Fighty Ducks, won the 2007 title, Detroit was not about to turn around and turn its back on all the fast guys it had on that team. So, I mean, I feel like there is, you know,
they have been a victim of their own success.
Yeah, sure. And they have been a progressive organization in the past. It's just, you're right, maybe now, maybe they're hanging on to something that is gone. But I do think it's also very difficult when you're moving into a new building to be like, and when you've built this mm-hmm. reputation as the team that always makes the playoffs, That's why I do feel like there'd be some value in like, you know what? So it's over. That's not happening anymore. Let's get on to something new, you know?
Yeah. Like I said, they're a victim of their own success because every team is kind of, when you think of progressive teams, now, you could name a bunch of them, I think. Toronto is now one of them. Carolina
Still sounds weird.
Is one of them. Yeah, it does sound weird. But all these teams, all these progressive teams, like they have roots somehow, some way with Detroit. Tampa Bay is another one with Steve Yzerman at the helm there, too. So all these guys who were like a part of Red Wing success at one point or another have moved on to bigger roles on other teams, and they've kind of just spread this gospel, and now yeah. everybody's kind of doing it. Now where do the Red Wings go? They have to try and find the next, I guess, market inefficiency.
Sure.
I don't know if they've done that yet. I don't know if it's, to me, it seems like Carolina's almost that team that is
yeah.
that is starting ahead, except, God, they got to do something about their goaltending.
Well,
it's just awful.
Something to address in the offseason, likely, or maybe in our fake trades, although I don't think we have that problem solved. We solved a few, not all of them, though. Coming up next on the other side of the break, we're going to try and get to the root of the Blues problems. A team that made the conference final last year has been one of the best in the NHL the past few years, but now life and death to make the Western Conference playoffs. As a result, Ken Hitchcock out, Mike Yeo in as the top man behind the Blues bench. We're going to talk to Louis Korek of NHL.com. That is coming up on the other side of the break here on Tape to Tape.
Doug Armstrong addressed the media about a few minutes ago, and here's a little bit from the news. Ken Hitchcock out as head coach of the St. Louis Blues. Mike Yeo, the associate head coach in waiting. Well, it's a few months quicker that he's got the head job. Here's Doug Armstrong.
You know you've done me wrong, baby.
Ken and I talked a lot during the Christmas break, and I just felt that you want to extend every last breath and making it work. We just don't play well enough. Ken is he's paying the price for all our failures, starting with mine. I'm the manager. I'm the quote-unquote president of hockey operations. It's my team. There's one guy in that room, one former guy in that room, that I think is going to the Hall of Fame, and it's Ken Hitchcock. Now, maybe some of those other guys will get there. They got a long way to go to reach the standard he set. I told him I thought that he did a hell of a job here. When he got here to where the franchise is now, it's light years ahead. He's leaving this group in a way better spot than he found it. I think we've let our group become independent contractors. One of the things I've learned about being around St. Louis is the Cardinals. They don't have independent contractors. When they do, they get rid of them. We have a situation now where I trust these guys and believe in them, but I have a sense of independent contractors. And what we have to do is we have to become a team again. We have to take pride in doing things for each other, for the betterment of the team. I see when we win how guys react when they don't get what they want. I see when we lose how guys react when they get what they want. It's a losing brand of hockey, and Ken's paying the price for it. I feel bad for the fan base that we didn't win a cup with Ken. I'm excited about winning a cup with Mike. That's my goal, is to win a cup with Mike.
Someday I know I'll be home at all, baby. Just like I know what the man should.
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Joining us on the line now, he covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. It is Louis Korak. Louis, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
We're all right. We're a little better than everyone in St. Louis, I would say. Were you shocked, surprised, not surprised at all to hear that Doug Armstrong made what was clearly a difficult decision based on how emotional he was about it, firing a great friend of his and a longtime coach, Ken Hitchcock, to promote Mike Yeo? What was your gut reaction when you heard that?
A little bit of both. You know, when you're around the team every day, you kind of get a sense and have a pretty good pulse of what's going on. And you just got the sense in the last couple of weeks with this team, you know, hitting the skids and falling down a slide here. And really, it's been a slippery slope where you just haven't had that, you know, what you call response that would clearly indicate to you that you can turn things around. I mean, they've lost 5 out of 6 here, and you know, 6 out of the last 7 at Scott Trade Center when they were clearly one of the more dominant home teams early in the season. And, you know, just from bad goaltending to poor play on defense, it just wasn't happening. And, you know, you just got a sense that something was going to happen, and you wondered when it was going to happen. And it was one of those situations where you just didn't know whether it was going to, whether it was going to work out or not. And you have to kind of put things in perspective, and you had a sense that it was either going to be the coach or whether they were going to start shuffling off players. And I'll be honest with you, you've been around the business long enough where you know, it's cliche, but you can't fire an entire team. I don't ever want to say it's easy, but it's easier to get rid of a head coach to make to send a message. And I think this is a message. And obviously, I don't know if you guys got a chance to hear or see Doug Armstrong's words yesterday. They were pretty strong,
yeah.
You know. And he called the players out, called the team out. You know, when you call a group a bunch of independent contractors, and you hear things like, you know, guys have to start playing for the note on the front of the jersey instead of the name on the back. It's pretty strong words, and I think the players got that message loud and clear. And unfortunately, you know, Doug Armstrong has maintained that Ken Hitchcock is his friend. He calls him his best friend, but this is a business, and you know, sometimes it can come across as a cutthroat business. But I think this is one of those decisions that you know, it was hard and gut wrenching on him, but something had to be done. And, you know, he's feeling the heat from upstairs, too. I mean, because this is a team that was a Western Conference finalist a year ago. You know, you miss a lot of key pieces now from that group. And although they expected, you know, maybe a little bit of regression, not quite to this point where you're, as of today, you're on the outside looking in the Stanley Cup playoff race, and that's not where they expected to be, and that's unacceptable around here.
It was a really emotional press conference at times for Doug Armstrong, and I wanted to ask you about that. The independent contractors that you mentioned there, that he called out his players for being, I mean, have you ever heard Doug Armstrong call out the players like that before? And do you think that if the team keeps struggling under Yao for the next month or so, that we could see some surprising trade out of St. Louis beyond, you know, the one that we expect, which is Kevin Shattenkirk will move?
Well, to answer your first part, no. I have never, you know, Doug Armstrong has at times, and the one that comes to mind is after they got bounced by Minnesota in the first round 2 years ago, he was very, very strong with his words then. Called it unacceptable, but and called his players out then as well, but not quite to the words where you're calling, you know, each individual independent contractors. Not in so many words like that, no. So those were very strong words, and I'm sure the players heard him. I'm sure it resonated throughout that locker room. And if it didn't, then it's going to be served. Notice is going to be served that anybody's expendable on this team now. And I say that candidly because obviously you're not going to shuffle off players like a Vladimir Tarasenko or an Alex Pietrangelo, some of your upper echelon core pieces. But it's not a good situation right now. And I say that knowing that the Blues are still right there. This isn't like a team that's at the bottom of the league and you have no shot of making the Stanley Cup playoffs and you're fighting for a lottery pick right now. I mean, this team is still right there. Obviously, as of today, they're on the outside looking in, but that's not a place where they expected to be when you were in the Final Four last year. So it's a tricky situation. And the Kevin Shattenkirk thing, that's another dicey one. I'm one of the few media members in the St. Louis area that's still of the belief that I still think that they can get something done there to keep him here. Because I'll be honest with you guys, when you look at Kevin Shattenkirk, if you take him off of this team, I just don't see anybody, and I know the comparisons have been made to a Colton Parayko, that he can step in and take that role. To me, they're different players, and I just don't see anybody in the system coming up or anybody that you could look at on this roster that can give you and fill the role that a Kevin Shattenkirk gives you. It's going to be tough, but I think that Doug Armstrong's going to have to take this down to the midnight hour, so to speak, because you just don't know right now whether you're going to be in or whether you're going to be out. And I don't think that you can afford to take this player off of your roster right now, knowing that fans are expecting a lot more of you.
So if they continue to struggle, though, and they don't trade Shattenkirk, or if they do trade Shattenkirk, but they want to do some other moves, like which other players do you think they would move? Like you, as you mentioned, they're not going to trade Tarasenko. I don't imagine they could trade Stastny with $7 million, his $7 million cap hit, and then a bunch of other guys like Steen and Schwartz. I mean, they play huge roles for this team, and they're signed for long term. So, I mean, I guess Patrick Berglund has an expiring contract, but what other players conceivably could they trade, or would they trade?
Yuri Laterra comes to mind, but he's another one that's got a huge contract that hasn't lived up to those expectations, not even close in my mind. And that would be a difficult contract for me to move, but I believe that's one that if they had a chance to move, that they would. And like you mentioned, Patrick Berglund's got an expiring contract, and he's actually played really well for this team this year. But, you know, I just don't know at this point. I'm not hearing a lot out there as to, other than Kevin Shattenkirk's name, how much of a demand for players that the Blues would make available that other teams would want. So this is going to be a real difficult situation. This is going to be one of those where if they don't trade Shattenkirk, they may just have to try to get this done with the group that they got. And considering you just fired your head coach, unless he can get these players to perform up to capabilities, that's going to be a tall task moving forward.
So what of the goaltending, Louis? I mean, we all know it's been miserable. Neither Carter Hutton nor Jake Allen has a save percentage over 900. They've said, you know, Jake's our guy, for better or worse. Do you think that is the case, or do you think there's a chance they give someone else a kick here in the next month?
As far as goaltending, no. Jake's their guy. They've maintained that. Mike Yeo even came out and said that yesterday in his press conference. Doug Armstrong said it a couple of weeks ago when they decided to keep Jake Allen at home for a road game that they went to playing the Winnipeg Jets, that he's our goalie today, he's our goalie tomorrow, he's our goalie of the future. And, you know, they're going to work with him through this. It's a mental struggle right now. Jake Allen's even admitted it's a mental struggle. It's one that he's going to have to overcome. And to be honest with you, I couldn't imagine a perfect guy to try to help him through it. And that's no discredit to Jim Corsi. Jim Corsi is one of the one of the more candid, cordial people I've ever dealt with in this business, to be honest with you. He's doing great things with a lot of goalies. But obviously, with the numbers the way they are, that was another move they felt like they had to make. But, you know, I can't imagine anybody working with Jake Allen better right now than Marty Brodeur. I mean, obviously, his pedigree speaks for itself. His resume speaks for itself. And, it's good to have that at your disposal. You know, a guy that's going to be, a lock to make the Hall of Fame one day. And, the Blues have that at their disposal. So, it's going to be up to Marty. It's going to be up to Ty Conklin, who they're going to bring in as well, to try to help Jake. You can only do so much from a technical aspect. And I've talked about this with Jake Allen a number of times in the last couple of days. I mean, you can beat a dead horse all you want. He feels like, from a technical aspect, that, he's got his game in gear. It's just a matter of, shaking the confidence and getting the cobwebs out of his head. I mean, right now, when you start thinking about and wondering if you're going to make that next save, it has nothing to do with your technical ability. It's basically, it just has to do with your confidence. Once they build his confidence up, I think he'll be fine. And do I think Jake Allen's going to be an elite goalie in this league one day? That's yet to be seen, because he's going to have to go out there and prove it. Do I feel like he's going to be a solid goalie in the NHL one day? Absolutely, I do. I've seen great stretches of this guy. I mean, last year, for example, when they traded between he and Brian Elliott, they were both phenomenal for this team. I mean, this team wasn't, number one in the league in save percentage. There was a reason for that. And both of those had a lot to do with it. But boy, when you go from number one to dead last in the league, that's a glaring deficiency right there. And a big reason why this team's worth that. But, they invested in Jake Allen for the next 4 years after this one. And, for the time being, they're going to stick with it. I just don't see them going outside for help right now to try to get this alleviated.
It was unconventional when the Blues brought in Mike Yeo to be the assistant, with the intention that he was going to be taking over the head coaching job for Ken Hitchcock after this season, when Ken was going to move on either within the team or elsewhere, whatever his plan was. And now that this has happened and they've had to fire Hitchcock in the season, do you think that was a mistake to not bring Yao in, but maybe just make it known that that was the plan, that this guy was going to be the head coach? I've never seen a team do that before, where you effectively have two head coaches on the bench, one's just waiting. Was that a mistake by the team, do you think?
Well, hindsight's 20/20, obviously. But to be honest with you, I thought they said all the right things and felt like they could make it work. I never believed that this was going to be something that was going to be smooth. I thought that they would make it work to the best of their abilities, but it's clearly obvious that it wasn't the right thing to do. I mean, I don't care what you say. I mean, Ken Hitchcock's pedigree speaks for itself. I mean, one win behind Al Arbor for third all time among coaching wins, but I don't care who you are. You could be Scotty Bowman or Joel Quenneville or whoever. I mean, if you're looking over your shoulder and you see that, and and literally he's visible within sight, the guy that's going to take over for you one day, even though you've declared that this is going to be your last year, that's got to be an uncomfortable situation. I just don't care who you are. And, Mike Yeo did his best to stay in the background and not try to make, I don't want to say make himself as visible, but I don't think he voiced himself as often as he could have as an associate coach for the title that was given to him for this year. But that could send mixed messages to players. And I asked some players that yesterday in the locker room, and a couple of them obviously denied that was ever an issue. But Kevin Shattenkirk, for one, said that it was a tough situation, and I believe him firmly. I just can't imagine that when you see, the words of one guy that's your head coach and that's been your head coach for the last 5 years, knowing that he's going to be on the outside looking in next year, you don't tend to take those words as strongly as you once did. And knowing that the guy that's eventually going to replace him is standing right there next to him, that's got to be tough for players to see that every day. And like I said, they made the best of the situation that was presented to them, but I just don't think in the long run that was the best thing that they could have done. And I know Doug Armstrong wanted to get Mike Yeo in here, but it was my understanding that they basically had a coach in waiting right there in Kirk Muller. And that was initially going to be the plan for this team was to maybe transition the team over to him. But for one reason or another, those plans fell apart. Mike Yeo was there, and Doug Armstrong didn't want to let him get away. He felt like if he didn't lock him up now, that he was going to wind up being on another team. And I believe he would have gotten another head coaching job somewhere else. So it was one of those, to me, I don't want to call it a knee-jerk reaction, but it was an impulsive move. And, you know, with the results that you saw yesterday, it was one that backfired a bit in their face.
Well, we will see what the results are on the ice down the stretch here for St. Louis. Tremendous pressure to make the Stanley Cup playoffs after making the Final Four last year. We'll see how it all plays out. Louis, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That is Louis Korek. He covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. You can follow him on Twitter at LKorak, K-O-R-A-C 10, LKorak 10. On the Twitter. Just a quick thought before we move on to my favorite part of the day. I don't know. Maybe this is out there in terms of if there's contractual issues. But if you're another team, say you're the Blackhawks or a team with a firmly ensconced, like a, you know, a coach that's not going anywhere, that's not going to be threatened by anyone. Don't you bring Ken Hitchcock in for 2 months to be your eye in the sky? And like, you know, Ken, we are going to play the Predators in the first round. You are, you know, a noted tactician. You are known for having a, you know, just a super insightful hockey mind and, you know, like all of them, but probably even more so, just loving it to death and living for nothing else kind of thing. Lock yourself in the video room and come back with one little thing that could make the difference in our 7-game series.
It's funny you bring that up because after Hitchcock got fired later in the day, Mike Babcock was asked about it.
Oh, yeah.
And he just spoke
that.
Glowingly about Hitchcock and said, you know, he hopes he sees him behind an NHL bench at some point. And I thought, well, why don't you just come to Toronto?
Yeah, absolutely.
And work with this young team.
That's right.
Like, he's not going to, in that situation, he's not going to come in and be the head guy where he grates on you right away. He's not going to be the voice that might kind of beat these guys.
He's just talking to Babcock. Like,
exactly.
Here's what I'm seeing.
He's
you know?
A great
what
hockey
do you
mind.
Think?
Yeah. And if you could add that, for sure, I would imagine you would need, you wouldn't even necessarily need permission from the Blues, right? Because they fired him, but they would have to keep paying him for the rest of the season, unless there's something in his specific contract.
Yeah, that says, that's right.
Yeah.
We don't know those details. Anyway, just a thought. And let's stay on the Blues while we segue to fake trades. God, I wish we had a drum roll for these. Okay, so...
Oh, man. I need to say, when we do these fake trades, every time I sit down, I realize how god-awful I am at it.
You're a terrible make-believe GM.
But you know what? In my fantasy hockey league, I make trades all the time. I just send out a whole bunch of offers and make wheeling and dealing. I can't come up with the fake ones.
So what about the St. Louis situation? Okay.
Yeah.
Louis says he thinks there's something to be done there with Shattenkirk, but don't forget, we're officially transitioning to a world without rules here where we're making stuff up. So I'm looking at a team that needs goaltending. They've said Jake Allen is the guy, but, I mean, St. Louis, goaltending has been an issue here for so long. Is there not a world where Marc-Andre Fleury to the St. Louis Blues for UFA to be Shattenkirk. Oh, there's our drum roll. For Shattenkirk and Jake Allen. I mean, you got Fleury for 2 more years after this. I know he's not having a great year, but he's obviously in a bad situation. That's the best crack you can take at improving your goaltending. Pittsburgh, you know, they don't want to get to the expansion draft and have both Matt Murray and Fleury available. Murray has steadied the ship and looks good. Right now, I mean, I look at that Pittsburgh D. I mean, unfortunately, Chris Letang seems to be out. You know, he can't go 2 months without something happening, so you'd be buying a little protection there. I think Shattenkirk, a right shot, plays his off wing in St. Louis, offside. And even, you know, that notwithstanding, I still look at that Pittsburgh blue line and think it could use a little help. I don't know.
That was their
something
weakness
there.
Last year, right? But they just found a way
well,
to...
Well, they found guys who were like Dumoulin who are better than we
Justin
realized,
Schultz,
right? Yeah,
like, he comes
yeah
out of,
absolutely.
Yeah, nowhere. That's an interesting one. Pittsburgh would be in the same kind of situation, but automatically, I'm assuming you're letting Jake Allen be exposed.
Yeah, that's right.
Unless you're trying to work
a
deal.
He's your backup, and maybe he gets it together, maybe he doesn't, but you don't care if you lose him in the expansion draft.
Right, and that's definitely a win-now move for the for the Penguins,
you're going for
right?
another cup.
I would,
And
I would think long and hard about that, but what I would say is if I am Pittsburgh, I'm seriously considering... You know, not so much moving Marc-Andre Fleury, because it sounds like on March 1st, Vegas is going to be able to start making some of these deals where you can turn to them and say, hey, don't take Marc-Andre Fleury and we'll give you this, depending on what that price is. Because in your fake trade, you would end up with Jake Allen, who you would then expose, because I think you would have to give up too much to Vegas for them to pass on him with the contract that he's got. I would be very... very scared if I'm Pittsburgh of moving ahead with just Matt Murray.
Really?
I think you're seeing, especially this season, and we're going to, you know, potentially have the Olympics coming up in 2018, where there's going to be compressed schedule again. You're going to need a second goalie that's going to help to push you through these. I think there's I would be wary of trading away Fleury, but man, that puts Pittsburgh, if they can add Kevin Shattenkirk to that blue line.
Well, and everything we hear is that Shattenkirk wants to play in the East. So if you're Pittsburgh and you got Sidney Crosby and Malkin in a great situation, he might say, you know what, I think I'll stick around here too, right? So
yeah,
also something to think about.
You know, I didn't really actually see this fake trade through, but I'm trying to figure out a way to get like the Rangers a puck-moving defenseman who can skate. And I was looking at, like, Toby Enstrom. Now you've got me thinking about Kevin Shattenkirk, because there are reports that's where he wants to end up, right? And so, you know, what would you have to give up to the Blues?
But St. Louis is dying for goaltending, and Pittsburgh has a guy they could trade.
Well, I mean, the Rangers have...
Yeah.
Ranta, and he's injured, but he's had a great showing this year, too.
He is, but he doesn't have the same track record.
Doesn't have the track record, no, but it gives you that safety net. If the moving on a little bit from that, though, staying on the Rangers, the team that I was trying to fit in there, or the player I was trying to fit in there, was Tobias Enstrom from Winnipeg, who still plays a fair amount of minutes, but his usage has gone down from what it was when they were first in Winnipeg and when they were the Atlanta Thrashers. He was always... a very underrated player, a fabulous
The poor man's Andre Markov, I think of him as. Like,
he's got this season and next season left on his contract, but Winnipeg's in a situation where they're, you know, they still kind of have to move Jacob Trouba, but they're not forced into that position yet. And whenever you get Tyler Myers back, which I don't know what's going on there, some personal issue that he's got, but whenever he comes back, you're going to be again in a situation where Trouba is going to have to move back to the left side where he doesn't want to play, whereas right now he's playing on the right, which is where he's happy. So if you can find a way to move Tobias Enstrom now, he's 32 years old. If you're Winnipeg, you're not going to the playoffs this year. You're going to have to sign him next year. I would be looking to trade him now. And the Rangers are that team that needs a guy exactly like Enstrom. They're a little slow on that back, and they could use that power play presence. They could use his passing and just his foot speed. And now, the Rangers are always a team that is not shy to give up futures or first-round picks or whatever, or they weren't anyways under Glenn Say. They're a little bit different situation there now, but they're still a team that's making a push for now. You are going for the Stanley Cup as long as you have Henrik Lundqvist, so you have to make this strong push. So I'm wondering if they can throw if you're Winnipeg, what are you looking for Tobias Enstrom? Are you happy with a first-round pick from the New York Rangers for a 32-year-old defenseman with 1 year on his contract?
Probably.
And if I'm the Rangers,
really happy.
I think I would also make that, because you can have Tobias Enstrom for two runs and you still have, you know, your defense corps that's been around there for a while that is time starting to catch up to it a little bit. But you've got some nice young forwards who you've added in the last year or two. I'm thinking of like Zibanejad and VC. And then you have the guys who have been around there for a while, like the Nashes and the Stepons and those guys. And I think this kind of gives them a nice, well-rounded, it helps them on their weakness on defense. It just helps them in their main weakness right now, and they need to make a run for the cup. I'm trying to figure out a way to get Enstrom there.
We should note, too, for our beloved listeners, we kind of stayed away from the, you know, rental player X for third-round pick, because those aren't a lot of fun. You know, we tried to do player for player ones here. Like this one, going back to the Detroit Red Wings. They need to change things up. We established that. The New York Islanders now suddenly rolling. And my God, they need to make the playoffs to write a better story after how miserable it's been. So how about Thomas Vanek back to the island along with Thomas Yurko looking for a change for Ryan Strome, who just hasn't been able to make it work with the Isles. Wings are taking a crack at a high pick who needs a fresh start. You know, Yurko, not as much potential probably as Strome, but again, a guy who's got a little some. And, you know, maybe you got to talk third rounder back to New York, fifth rounder to Detroit or something like that. And Vanek, we know, played well with Tavares before. Yeah. Almost a point a game in 47 games the year that, let's not forget, Thomas Vanek turned down $7 million for 7 years. Best thing that ever happened to the Islanders there. But, yeah, I wonder if there's a way to make that happen and get the Islanders a little push.
And yet they wouldn't sign Kyle Okposo.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Bringing Vanek in there would be interesting. Yeah. It kind of fills that hole that they've had ever since
like
Okposo left.
Strange decision kind of to bring P.A. Parenteau in and then put him on waivers before the season. So here's maybe my favorite one. I'm definitely anxious to get your thoughts on this. All right. So this is not necessarily something that's going to have a huge impact on anything that happens this year, but to the New Jersey Devils, you've got New Jersey native Bobby Ryan. Yes, Bobby Ryan with the massive contract headed back the other way. How about Mike Camilleri? Now, let me give you some rationale here.
Okay.
So Bobby Ryan's 29. He's got five more years at 7.25, and it ain't going well in Ottawa if you haven't checked in recently. Now, you might say, what the hell does Jersey want with a guy that's got that much, you know, term left on a big deal? But, you know, this is someone who's been a really good player, a 30-goal scorer his last 3 years in Anaheim. Would you, for the sake of getting 5 years younger, Camilleri's 34, and he signed for two more years anyway. So he's two more years at $5 million. So the Sens are going, hey, Camilleri is actually kind of sneaky productive when he's in the lineup. He can still play on your top six, probably this year, next for sure. You're getting out from under the miserable contract of Bobby Ryan. Camilleri's deal might not be great, but it's over in 2 years. And if you're the Devils, you're saying, you know what? We're trying to get younger. We'll take a crack that this guy, we're on the hook for $5 million anyways for Camilleri for the next 2 years. We'll take a crack at this guy finding himself again in a new situation. And maybe all of a sudden we've got, you know, a 30 goal scorer on our hands again, something like that. Not crazy.
No, I don't think it's crazy. I think though that New Jersey could just win that trade hands
down.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah.
And not that if Ottawa wouldn't do it, that they'd be missing out on this fabulous resurgence of Bobby Ryan, because it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
It's not going to happen there, yeah.
He looks exactly like the type of guy who just needs a fresh start somewhere else. It'd be interesting him going back to his home in New Jersey, you know, teaming up there with... They definitely need more offense. And if they could find what Bobby Ryan used to be back in New Jersey, and you can add that to...
In Anaheim, yeah.
In Anaheim, and you can add that to Taylor Hall. Suddenly, you're starting to look much better on that forward unit. Sadly, New Jersey has a lot of other issues on that lineup. But hey, at least it gives you a guy who's under contract for a while, so that's something you don't have to worry about. Unless he really is just at that point in his career where he can't recover.
Or something has happened.
But in Ottawa, it makes sense for Ottawa because they're not going to get that out of Bobby Ryan, and they might get something more out of Mike Camilleri, and in the financial implications. Like, you're going to be off the... These guys are going to be off the books
in
2 years.
Yeah. Camilleri's got, like, guy who scores 9 goals in the playoffs for you written all over him to me. You know what I mean?
It also strikes me as the kind of move Ottawa would make because... Yeah, we're a playoff team, and this guy's a playoff player. And like, actually, you're not a playoff team. You're playing over your head right now, and this is the kind of move maybe you shouldn't make. Maybe if you're trading Bobby Ryan, you should look younger, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them make that kind of move because they think they're winners, and they're in a playoff spot right now.
Well, let's dive into a team that's going to be making moves here, we think, in either the immediate or foreseeable future. Just a general philosophical conversation about Colorado. Where are you at in terms of, do Duchesne, Landeskog, Ginla, those are the names we're going to hear. I mean, I'll give you my take quick, is that I almost think you owe it to Jerome Ginla to trade him, because it's 100%. Not like there's, you know, it's not a situation like Landeskog or Duchesne where you say, well, we got to wait and, you know, you got to knock it out of the park. The difference is a good trade is a third rounder, a bad trade is a fourth rounder. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So obviously, let's just put out there, the tastiest landing spot would be seeing Ginla go to Edmonton, his hometown team, the former Flame there. So he could play on the third line on the right side with Lucic and, you know, rediscover the form where dude scored like 22 goals last year, 29 the year before that, 30 the year before that. Do you think he's really just fallen off a cliff, or do you think he's playing for a positively miserable team? So I think it's understood Ginla's going to be, some team would take Jerome Ginla for a cheap price, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. And again, that's a guy who could go to a playoff team and look at it as, this is my last go, and just go off. Not necessarily that he would lead a team in scoring, but be a key
critical scoring,
key contributor, a key depth guy. And I like your suggestion of him going on a third line. I would love to see him back in Calgary. That would be fantastic, too, if he could go back there and have a productive playoff. But you're right. Colorado has to make that move. That's a given. That's the automatic move that they have to make for whatever they can get.
Yeah.
Put him in a situation that he wants to go to. I would hope that they would kind of work with him on getting him somewhere he wants to go, while at the same time getting as much out of that as they possibly can. So they kind of get help him, but help themselves at the same time. But other than that, I would be very careful if I'm Colorado. First thing I do, if I'm the ownership or whoever is really in charge of everything, I don't know how involved the owners are there. First thing I do is I say, is Joe Sakic the guy taking us through any kind of rebuild? Because if he's not, and I kind of don't think he should be, I'm making a replacement at general manager before I trade Matt Duchesne or Gabriel Landeskog.
Yeah, or you're putting a moratorium on trades.
Whoever
right now,
trades those guys is in charge of this team for the next 4 or 5 years at least, because those are franchise-turning moves. I mean, if you trade those guys, you're probably doing it for futures and draft picks, and you're going in the toilet, you're drafting high for the next couple of years. And that's why I also wouldn't make those moves in season right now.
So you basically set an absurd price right now,
unless you get that. Yeah. Maybe if somebody comes along and does offer you that. If you're Colorado and Carolina comes calling and offers you one of their fabulous young defensemen like a Jacob Slavin or a Noah Hanifin or something, how much more, or would they need to offer more on top of that for you to move Duchesne? Probably.
I don't think Carolina would give up Hanifin, period.
The thing is, they at some point, I think, are going to have to move one of those defense. They're in an opposite position that a lot of teams are. Like, Toronto is looking for a defenseman. Everybody's looking for a defenseman. Carolina, at some point, and maybe it's not now, maybe it's early for them to make a move like that, but at some point, they're going to be in that position where they're the team with too many defensemen, and they're going to need a forward, and they're in this great position where they have all sorts of, at least five great young defensemen that they can dangle out and see what kind of a return they could get. It might be too early for them to make that move, but again, if I am Colorado, I'm waiting to the offseason, because you're going to have a ton of cap room to work with. You're going to have a brand new Vegas team that's coming in. You're going to have other teams that are going to want to make moves so that they don't have to expose somebody. They don't want to expose to the expansion draft. You're going to have so many more options. So unless you do get absolutely blown away with a crazy offer that we look at and say, oh, well,
they
that's
had
obvious.
To do that, yeah,
yeah, that was a great win of a trade for Colorado. I think it would be nuts to rush into a trade for Duchesne or Landeskog. And it doesn't sound like they're going to move Nathan MacKinnon anyway.
Right.
Just got to take it slow. When you lost Eric Johnson, that was kind of the end of your season. That hurt them a lot. He's an underrated defenseman. He logged so many minutes for them. And, of course, Semyon Varlamov's just been a complete disaster. His season ended after another injury. Just a lot going on. There's a lot.
Well,
to,
that and that also,
there.
Yeah, that also then, I mean, maybe we'll dive into this on another day, but makes you swing back to, so maybe you don't trade Duchesne and Landeskog because they are young and you draft, you know, second overall this year and see if you can get it back on the rails that way.
The thing about Duchesne is he's a UFA
Two more after this season,
he's with Colorado, and then he becomes a UFA. So, again, the closer you get to that point, the less and less trade value he's going to have. I think you could get quite a bit for him now or in the offseason whenever you do trade him, because he is still controllable for a while. And the $6 million is pretty good. And another guy, if he goes to a team that has better players around him, better system around him, should, you know, get back to the kind of player we projected him to be when he was drafted. He's been a little inconsistent over the years in Colorado. But everybody else, I don't want to trade Gabriel Landeskog. Like, he's controlled for another 2 years beyond Duchesne is. Right. Nathan McKinnon is no doubt that you're going to keep him. Tyson Barrie is one where, you know, if you had any kind of depth whatsoever on the blue line, you'd probably be looking at moving him. $5.5 million, three more seasons after this one left on his contract, so you should be able to get some for him. Nice young defenseman, but even he's had a kind of a bad season and definitely shown that he's not a number one. But you're not in a position where you can move, even consider moving Tyson Barrie, because you have nothing else on defense. If you've already lost Eric Johnson, if you then trade Tyson Barrie,
sure.
I mean, you basically don't have an NHL blue line anymore, so you don't even have that option.
Well, I'm sure any and all option is going to be explored there in the next few months. We know one team that has been coming up with all kinds of creative ways to build a better team is the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yes, we saved the Leaf trade for last. You referenced it, Rory. They're just one of many teams looking for help on the blue line. They're loaded up front, especially long term, but going to need that right shot help on the back end. That's why they're calling the Nashville Predators. You need a defenseman, you call the Nashville Predators. And they're asking for Ryan Ellis.
Ooh.
And what are you going to have to give up to get Ryan Ellis? No, not JVR, boys and girls. You can't get him for a winger. You got to give up a C. You got to give up the man who's come so far. Nazem Kadri. Straight up. Kadri for Ellis. Nashville can run out a Johansson Kadri 1-2. And the Leafs get a guy who probably they're, you know, I could imagine the misery in Leafland right off the hop being like, oh my God, we've traded Naz for a 40. Well, not, I mean, this would be the first year he gets 40 points, but Ellis is a good right shot, still improving, do a bit of everything, played for Canada at the World Junior, played for Canada at the World Championship. He's one of those guys who's a better player than a lot of people realize. And we live in a world where Taylor Hall gets traded for Adam Larson. People value defensemen. I mean, the cost of, you're not going to get Drew Doughty. You know, like the name that gets moved as a forward is going to be splashier than the name that gets moved as a defenseman. Mm-hmm. I think it's one you have to think about.
Yeah, certainly if you're the Leafs, I'm thinking about that one big time.
Nashville still got Josi, Subban, and Ekholm. Those are three pretty damn good defensemen.
See, like I was talking about Carolina, Nashville is in that beauty situation where they have defensemen they could move, and maybe they should move to help them at forward a little bit, give them some depth. And Kadri would be a terrific addition. He's really blossomed as a
Selke candidate on a 34-goal pace.
Can I say something about that? You do have to play penalty kill to be considered for the Selke. That's stupid. How can you win Defensive Forward of the Year penalty kill? I don't understand that. Anyway.
Well, we will save that one for another podcast. If I had my way, it would be all fake trades all the time. We'll try and restrain ourselves with the trade deadline still just now a month away. But my goodness, there should be a lot to talk about between now and then, including
how fast has this season gone by?
Blink,
we're a
blink.
Month away from the trade deadline.
It's crazy, man, and that means some action coming up. We'll be here to chronicle it every week. Make sure you tune in, subscribe on iTunes, check us out, sportsnet.ca. That's all you've got this week, but come back next time for more glass rattling hockey action on Tape to Tape.
Has been Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.